You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey everybody on the internet, welcome to another episode of the ToneMob.com podcast, the show where we talk about guitar tone and the people behind it. Today we are at the home of Chris Benson of Benson Amps, and yeah, should have a good time here.
What's up, internet people?
Oh, those crazy internet people. So what's been going on, man?
Oh man, just quite a bit, actually. I've got a... I quit my job.
Yeah? That's the goal, isn't it? That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been an amp tech for about 7 years now. And I finally... you know, the new amps have gotten to a place where I can step away from that comfortably. And just put all my efforts into the new business, so...
That's fantastic. So it's like we've talked about a lot of this before, and you've been doing the amp repair for a long time, and that's how I got to know you.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually bought my Monarch, which is my main go to. But
that's what I like to hear.
Doing a little digging, you started at Varelin in Seattle,
mm-hmm.
which is, as most people know him today, a dramatic departure from what you kind of do as amps.
Yeah. So Ben does the heavy, loud, you know, Hesher kind of amps, 100 watts and up. I mean, he's got a 300-watt guitar amp.
Yeah, so insane.
The Meat awesome. Smoke Overdrive, awesome. Which is a fantastic amplifier. And when I was working up there, we had a lot of fun kind of putting those together and doing all sorts of tweaks, but... you know, my favorite kind of guitar amp is something a lot different, which is I really like the kind of low wattage power tube saturation style amplifiers, the ones that compress and can do the dirty clean thing really well, or just the clean thing.
Yeah.
And most people, there's most types of music, I should say, don't actually need a 100-watt and up amplifier. And some just do.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah, that's pretty obvious. The types that do need it are pretty clear. But, like you say, it's not needed most of the time. Although it is pretty fun, regardless of, as far as a guitar player goes. It is pretty fun to do that once in a while.
It's all right.
Blow your face off just once every 3 months or so, just because. But, yeah, the wattage range that the Monarch in it is in is substantially more manageable, obviously.
Yep. The Monarch's 15 watts, and we're actually coming out with the 30 watt, which might be called the Dual Monarch. It might be called something else.
Oh, really?
It's going to be pretty much the same circuit, just more tubes.
Nice. That'll be... Oh, man, that's going to be cool. I didn't know that was coming out. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah, yeah. We've been kind of developing it over the last... few months, and I got the transformers today.
Oh, really?
Mercury Magnetic sitting downstairs, and I've got the chassis. Chassis are probably a couple weeks away, and yeah, we're getting really close.
I'm really excited
about it.
I think people are gonna super dig that. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, there's just some people who 15 watts isn't loud enough.
Yeah, that's not me in 99% of cases, but I mean, since you're the amp guy, and maybe you can explain this to me because I'm a flunky guitar player, how come some 15 watt quote unquote amplifiers are so much louder sounding? Not just, I mean, you plug it in the same cab. I know speaker efficiency has things to do with that, but
yep.
There are some 15-watt amps that are labeled 15 watts and that are way louder than others that are labeled at 15 watts. Is that... What's that all about?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. One is that, you know, the so-called 15-watt amplifier is only putting out 12 or 13 watts. Like, most Princetons are actually only putting about 13 watts.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and they have a pretty imbalanced phase inverter for the most part when they start distorting, and that'll cut down in your headroom. And then the cabinet construction speakers are another reason. I use the pine cabinets, which are really resonant, sort of like the body of an acoustic guitar, and they actually make the sound significantly louder because the whole thing's just ringing. And then
okay.
The speaker efficiency is kind of an element of that as well. Speakers can be wildly louder, handling the same wattage, the same output. I use some Weber speakers, the Alnico Webers, and those are way quieter than some of the ceramic stuff that I use. Then some Alnico are actually louder than the ceramic, so it really just has to do with speaker choice.
That's very interesting. Yeah, because I have that Jensen in mine, and it's that's a pretty loud cab, no matter what. I mean, I got other 15-watt heads I've plugged into it, and it's a pretty loud cab. You think that has to do with the resonance more, or the speaker?
The resonance, and that speaker is actually extremely efficient for an Alnico as well, which is part of the reason I like the Jensens, or that particular Jensen. That's pretty much the only Jensen that I do like.
Right.
Yeah, it's just a combination. That thing is stinking loud. That's my favorite speaker right now for my amps.
I'm digging that thing. I've plugged it in with a lot of different amps, and I'm super stoked on that cab and speaker combo right now. It's really been it for me.
Yeah, a lot of people think they don't like the Alnico because it's, you know, it can lack low end and be inefficient. You know, all the old Jensens were like that.
Yeah.
So people are like, I don't like Alnico. But there's some that are, they don't have to be inefficient. They can actually be loud. The Celestian Gold's a really good example of that. And the Jensen P12N, the new one, 100 watt, is another great speaker for that.
Nice. Yours is the P12, what's in that, the cab I have? I'm trying to think.
A P12N.
It is the N. Yep. Okay. Anybody listen to the last episode will hear me scratching my head going, Pete, who? I can't remember, but I put it in the show notes, so they've already figured that out.
It's a little confusing because the old P12N was actually a 50-watt speaker.
Oh, okay.
And they're probably using a different voice coil material for the new ones. It's a totally different speaker, but it still has an Alnico sound.
Oh.
It's just a lot louder.
That's very interesting because it seems like they put some effort into making it look like a...
Oh, yeah.
And be kind of a quote-unquote reissue of the original. So I found that's pretty interesting.
Yep.
Yeah. I did not realize that was a 100-watt speaker.
Yep. Straight up. That'll handle a plexi.
That's great. Good to know. That opens me up to way more experimentation than I thought I had. That's awesome. So, let's see. One of the classic questions that I've been asking is, it's kind of unrelated to technical stuff, but I've been asking people what their dream guitar rig is, starting from the guitar and kind of going on. if you just, you know, were flush, like no one's business.
Okay. Well, you know, that's kind of a weird question to ask an amplifier builder.
Yes.
Because
yeah, I understand.
I designed the amp basically for myself.
Mm-hmm.
The Monarch amp, the Tallbird reverb, and I was a bass player for years, the Nostic bass amp too. I'm going to have to go with the Monarch amp.
Can't argue that. I mean, I myself cannot possibly argue that because that's my favorite amp right now. So, there we go.
My favorite, my dream guitar would probably be... mid-60s, you know, Gibson ES-335 with a Bigsby.
Oh, yes.
That would be amazing. I like the feedback that hollow bodies offer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't like distortions or overdrive so much, but I do like fuzzes, and I would have to say probably, you know, a vintage Big Muff or a vintage fuzz face, gotcha, which I know are wildly different.
But, right.
I don't want to say Echoplex. Probably Space Echo in there somewhere.
Space Echo,
I like Space Echoes a lot.
Nice.
What else would be in my dream rig? I mean, I could get crazy and just say plate reverb, but...
Right. Hey, that counts if you're in the studio. That could be part of a dream. I mean, or, you know, in Pink Floyd.
I actually have a buddy who welds, who I think we're going to start making some plate reverbs.
Oh, really?
Yep, some old EMT clones. And I have a couple guys with studios in town who kind of are into the idea. Mm-hmm. So I think it might happen, because they're actually pretty simple.
You got all kinds of things up your sleeve.
I have more ideas than time.
That's so cool. Oh. So, with plates, I know plate sound. Mm-hmm. But plate operation is something I've never looked into. I don't
quite. Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a simple thing. I know there's not much to it. But with tape, I get how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Plates, I'm sure a lot of people listening will be like, well, you idiot. I know how that is.
All right.
But tell me more, please.
Intro to plate reverb for dummies.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying you're a dummy, but...
But I am, so that's all right.
So a plate will have some sort of driver that will be driven by an amp, just like anything else. Mm-hmm. Your speaker's a driver. Usually like right in the middle of it or off to the side, depending. I think the EMT ones, which are the famous German ones that a lot of them were based off of, were slightly off to the side of the middle. And I believe it's I forget the exact dimensions, so I'm just going to shut up about that.
Nah,
but they're
large.
It's a few, I think it's between 2 and 3 yards across and between 1 and 2 yards tall.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really big. So what happens is this driver kind of shakes the middle of the plate. And I remember the very first ones only had one kind of pickup, basically the contact mic, you know, towards the edge of the plate in one direction or another, and EMT started doing stereo ones where they would have two later on, and it's just like you send the signal to the amplifier that shakes the plate. It's basically just shaking a very, very thin metal plate, so, you know, if you're there in the room tapping it, it would go whoosh.
Oh, okay, I got it. It's not like ribbon mic thin, but it's...
No, it's not. Mm-hmm. No, it's actually... You can get this kind of thickness of metal at metal shops.
Gotcha.
It's pretty thin, but... You know, if you've ever dealt with aluminum flashing, it's probably about that thickness.
Okay.
You tap it, and it goes whoosh.
Gotcha.
And that gets stretched out. They actually have these tensioners. There's a bunch of different ways that people figured out to tension them. And I think EMT used some sort of spring clip to just kind of pull it taut. So it was... And that's it.
That was much less complicated than I thought they
were. It's very simple.
Because I just seeing pictures of them from the outside, it's like, well, there's got to be a lot of business going on in there.
Well, some of them have these kind of dampener things that you use some sort of... just kind of stepped motor to... move away from the plate and towards the plate to and that's actually your decay time.
Oh, okay.
And it goes to, you know, within, you know, a couple millimeters off the plate or whatever to all the way to like 5 centimeters.
So it's mechanically adjusted.
Yep.
on them. Okay.
Yep. And wow. They use some sort of servo motor for that on some of them, and others you just, I think, moved the pad away.
Oh, just broke it away, kind of like just, you know.
There was all sorts of different options for it, I guess.
Very interesting.
I'm probably not going to make one with servo motors, to be honest with you, but I will make it so it sounds good.
Well, what's new? So, recently, kind of separate from the Benson Amp stuff, you had a recent Kickstarter that went quite... nicely, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, yeah. So one of my so I'm part owner in this pedal company called Harbin Audio, that I started with my buddy Steve, who owns this modular synth company here in town called Synthrotech. And he's got a bunch of elves working on his stuff all the time. He's got 10 guys, love synth stuff. They're all synth geeks. But he doesn't know anything about guitar gear, and I do. And so basically this company consists of me drawing schematics up of either pedals that are in my brain or pedals that don't exist anymore that I want to exist.
Right.
And be like, we should make this.
And they say, why?
Yeah, Steve just kind of does it, man. He's just like, all right, man, you're the guitar guy. That's cool. And so we just did a Kickstarter for an octave fuzz, which is a pretty faithful reproduction of a Univox Super Fuzz, which is one of my favorite pedals, except with, you know, updated things like true bypass and an LED. And I actually kind of goosed the gain a little bit in the back end of the circuit, so you can actually get the fuzz signal to be a lot louder than the clean signal, which is not something that the original Univox Super Fuzz featured.
Okay.
So, yeah, we based it off like the 70s one with the orange one with the kind of blue pads, which actually had a little trim pot inside that you can dial in the octave effect.
Very nice. That
by ear.
I want one just from looking at it. I mean, that fuzz is kind of, I mean, for some people, that's the holy grail of fuzz pedals, which is kind of ironic considering most of the other Univox line was not the holy grail of anything. They had some really wicked stuff, but I wouldn't hear anybody calling it the holy grail.
I don't know, man. One of my favorite amps of all time is the Univox U45B, which is little 112 combo.
I don't think I've seen that.
It's insane.
Yeah?
They're kind of rare, but they sound so good. They're one of my favorite guitar amps.
What is there anything a little more familiar that you would compare it to?
Probably a Tweed Deluxe or something like that.
Okay.
With tremolo built in.
Nice.
These weird tubes. I actually, it's weird. I don't know if it's on purpose, because it was basically just like a bunch of Japanese not guitar players who were designing this stuff.
Right, that's what I'm gathering. Like, people who just wanted to kind of put a product out, like,
yeah,
more or less.
Yeah, they wanted to sell something. but that doesn't always translate to, like, good tone or kind of a cool thing. But Univox, for the most part, has been pretty great.
And they're, well, I mean, the sound's most important, but the aesthetics on everything they did was freaking sick.
Yeah.
It looks, all their stuff looks so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's because I like retro 70s type of things or what, but their amps, their pedals, some of their kind of clone guitars and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, those guys know what's up as far as looks go. It's, and apparently they do with circuits somehow.
Think so. They make this tiny little tube, you know, not tube, I'm sorry, little transistor tape echo about this big. I guess you can't really see this internet. but it's like, I don't know, maybe 9 inches wide by 3.5 inches tall. This little tape echo that sounds insane.
What's it like? Is it like cassette based, or what do they use for a cartridge?
The funny thing about this is they actually use these, I'm probably not saying it right, but like dictaphone cassettes. Basically these old cartridges that people use in these machines to record, you know, business conversations.
Okay. Okay. I know what you're talking about. You probably are saying that correctly. That sounds right to my uneducated
mind. And no one knew where to get these cassettes for years, but I have a buddy here in town who used to advertise. He figured out where they got these cassettes for the Univox tape echoes, because everyone was like, yeah, mine's useless. I can't find the cassette anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He figured out it was like the old dictaphone cassettes, and he just bought a stockpile of them. He was selling them out of the back of this recording magazine, and his kind of business name was Real Bastard, with, you know, R-E-E-L,
okay, Bastard. Right.
Because he told me that he just felt like a real bastard, because he bought them for 50 cents, and he was selling them for, like, 20 bucks.
Then he didn't feel too bad then. He's feeling all right.
Not bad enough to not do it.
But then again, if I had that Echo, and it was like 20 bucks to get it back rocking.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't, even if I knew the guy was making that much money on it, I wouldn't hesitate. I would grab it. If I couldn't find it anywhere else, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, 20 bucks is nothing for a good, you know, tape Echo.
That's awesome.
And a lot less than you would pay for a full-tone,
yeah,
Echoplex cartridge these days.
Definitely. Speaking of that, have you seen, and if you have, what's your opinion on that T-Rex tape Echo that's coming out that's cassette-based? That looks pretty sick to me, but
I haven't heard of it, but I've wanted to do a cassette-based one for a long time.
It's, yeah, I can't remember what they called it. I think it's supposed to be coming out here pretty soon. They debuted it at, I think they debuted it at Wintername last year, if I'm not mistaken, but it...
Is this a full tone?
No, T-Rex.
T-Rex.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's T-Rex. I might have to fact check myself on that. If I'm wrong, I'll notate it, but I'm pretty sure it's T-Rex. I think it was made... They were having it made in Denmark, and yeah, it was this little cassette-based pedal tape delay, and... Oh, it was a replicator. It was called the replicator. Oh. That shouldn't have been that hard to remember. That
sounds familiar.
Yeah. It was pretty gnarly looking. I don't know anybody that's put their hands on one yet, but I'm sure out there on the interweb somebody can chime in on that.
Interesting. Well, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. Hey, there's room for more than one. That's for sure.
Yeah, totally.
So as far as delays go, would you say that a tape-based effect would be kind of your go-to? Or do you have others you kind of like? I'm a big, like, old-school Bucket Brigade guy just from the sound. And
yeah, I mean, I love the sound of tape delays, but, you know, I've only actually brought one to a show once or twice, and then I was like, this is really stupid. This is a heavy electromechanical device that is, you know, it's going to break.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts there.
And I'm not going to have delay for the show, and also I'm going to have to fix it. Yeah. So I don't bring them around, really. My favorite delay is, you know, just a straight up Deluxe Memory Man. Mm-hmm. You know, I have one of the old AC...
Yes.
AC power ones, and I love it. It's hard to, you can't really go wrong with them, in my opinion. And then Behringer actually made a clone of those, which they didn't market at all. I don't know why no one knows about them. The Vintage Time Machine.
This is news to me, so news to everyone.
They're using the cool audio chips.
Right.
Which is, you know, not the same thing as, doesn't sound the same.
No.
Like
it's not like the MN30005.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the big one.
Yeah, the 5 or the 8. Mm-hmm. But they sounded pretty good. And they sounded a little darker. And I used one of those for a couple of years, and then someone traded me a Memory Man for a couple Harbin pedals. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'll just put a $400 pedal on my board.
Sure, why not?
You only have one life. I mean,
yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, you got to have the best mojo that you can possibly have, and that's tough to beat as far as delays go. That's got mojo going on like no one's business, other than a tape delay.
I love those things. Yeah, and tape, you know, tape delays are awesome. You know, I've used Echoplexes a lot in recording, and the more broken they are, usually the cooler results.
Yeah. The more gnarly it gets. That's kind of why I like some of these ones that have come out that have the effects loop in it. You can, mm-hmm. you can mimic broken stuff by putting fuzzes in the on the repeats and things of that nature. It's just kind of something I have a lot of fun with. I've had some ridiculous results putting in an effects loop of a delay pedal. It's like, wow.
Well, I mean, I hear a lot of crazy sounds, you know, as a repair tech. You know, when something's broken in the right way, it can sound pretty amazing.
Yeah. Is that something you ever try to explore? Like what is that?
You know, hey. If I had, like... if I had more time, I would probably mess... Usually I'm just trying to get something out the door and make sure it's, you know, it doesn't break.
Mm-hmm.
But I have some ideas for that kind of thing. I want to make something where you can actually lift the ground on the first filter cap in you know, an amp preamp where mm-hmm. it'll just start ghost noting and get really gnarly and
yes.
just make that like a switchable effect. But I just haven't yet.
Time, right?
Because it sounds really cool. I mean, it'll play these weird subharmonics that have nothing to do.
That's something that I mean, I don't know if I've heard it. That's not something I don't know what that sounds like. That's a new one to me.
It just sounds broken.
Cool. I do know what that sounds like.
But if you can take that broken sound and, you know, be like, no, this is what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But people would be kind of stoked. Like, yeah, there's this thing that makes these random lower tones.
Right.
You know, while you play, that's what this thing does. Okay. Be used, you know, artistically. But I hear a lot of stuff that can probably be used musically.
I guess you want to get all Sonic Youth on it. It'd be tougher to find something that couldn't be used than some things. I mean, I've heard some crazy stuff that ended up on a record. Oh, that worked out. But sure you've heard a lot more than I have. Fixing broken things. So
yeah, I mean, it actually, you know, it gets old, and I have to remind myself, you know, this is just sound, and just kind of trying to maintain that childish outlook
mm-hmm.
in terms of just like, wow, that sounds neat, instead of, oh my god, that sounds broken.
Like, it's messed up. I gotta fix it.
Yeah.
Like, wait a second.
Which I think is, you know, that's something that a lot of recording engineers struggle with as well. Well, does it sound cool? Does it sound right? I mean, I think a lot of people are just concerned with making it sound right. But there's a lot of things that don't sound right that sound amazing. And if you just kind of approach it from a different perspective, if you can kind of step out of your engineer shoes for a second.
Yeah. Yeah, and then... I can definitely relate to that. That I've not because I'm an engineer, but because I've butted heads with the engineer end. I'm like, no, that sounds cool. That's what I want. I'm like, yeah, but listen to it. It sounds like trash. I'm like, listen to it in the mix. Like, sometimes things. Actually, I was working on a blog post about that. ToneMob.com. sometimes. In my opinion, things that aren't... they don't necessarily sound right by themselves. Like, I was recording this super tinny, super, almost ear-piercing Tele track. Like, I had a Telecaster bridge pickup plugged into, I believe, like, a deluxe reverb, and I had cranked the treble and stuff, because in my mind, that song sounded super dark. And I just gave it some ring-out chords. And the engineer was telling me, I don't know, that's going to be super bright. And then just sitting it in the mix at the same level as everything else, we sat back and listened to it, and it's like, oh no, that's right. Now, that's not to say I'm any kind of sound engineer. I just knew the song sounded too dark.
Well, you saw my Instagram post yesterday. Hey, Dad, how do I become a sound engineer?
Poof.
Poof, you are, son. Just like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is about how it goes. There's not exactly a qualification program, which is a good thing, in my opinion. Lends to some more creativity, but then again, I've had pretty good luck with most engineers that I've dealt with. So.
It's a good and bad thing. I mean, you really have to... You have to find the right mix in a person. I mean, you got to find the guy who's not afraid to make something, you know, sound not like it should.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, lends itself to the song. It's all about the song to me.
It totally is. I mean, good guitar tone is good guitar tone, but, like, a good big muff tone by itself can sound awful with the rest of the song. So, like, if it don't work, it don't work. And I think, myself included, a lot of people get lost in that. Like, but my tone was so good. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole thing about... I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Fender amps.
Mm-hmm.
Fender amps sound fantastic, usually when played by themselves.
Right.
But I've been in so many situations where someone recorded this gorgeous, clean guitar part with a Fender. And, you know, Fender, you know, even if you have the tone controls straight up and down, the thing has a mid-scoop a mile wide and a mile deep.
Yeah.
You're hearing the bass and the treble, and you're not hearing much mid-range, and that's... why it sounds so good by itself. That's why tone guys are like, this is my awesome tone. They'll strum the Fender amp and it'll just sound glassy and deep and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And you get that sort of sound in a band situation where there's cymbals that are occupying the high end and you have a bass guitar and a kick drum occupying the low end. And all of a sudden, the guitar's function is to occupy the mid-range. That's pretty much what a guitar speaker is for, anyways. That's what it's good at, and you get that beautiful Fender tone into a mix, and all of a sudden it disappears because there's nothing in the mid range.
Yeah, it's not there. That I usually relate that to big muff stuff more, just because
big muffs are massively scooped in the mid range.
Yeah, I run my Fenders with some more mid-range on purpose, anticipating that. Because that is my... I mean, I'm the tone guy. That's me right there that you just described. Actually, I really honestly did do a blog post about being a tone guy. And you might get a kick out of that. That one's pretty funny. Shameless plug. But yeah, it's kind of funny because yeah, everybody gets caught up in their own sound, and sometimes that isn't right. Sometimes it actually needs to sound bad on its own to sound good with the rest of the band, which is very hard for some people to grasp. And it took me a while to figure that out myself. So.
Well, it's a simple concept, but it's something that I think people have to kind of come to that conclusion on their own.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're like, no, this is an amazing tone that I just got. Listen to it. Like, how would this be bad on a record? They're like, well, dude, you've got, like, this huge, like, you know, 10 dB spike at, like, 100 hertz that is right where the kick drum punch is supposed to be. And no, dude.
Well, I was talking to somebody via email recently, and they were having problems standing out in the mix. Now, this didn't end up being their problem. The problem was their other person was just too loud. And, at least from what I gathered from the video they sent me, they sounded great, and then their other person came on, and they were just too loud. This was an iPhone video. Actually, who was that? Oh, that was, Emily Wolf Music. Yeah. That sent that in. So if she's listening, this is who I'm talking about. Your tone sounded good.
Hey, Emily.
But we did talk about, because before I heard the track, I was curious. Like, oh, well, I wonder if maybe she's too scooped in the mids, just from what she's describing. And I kind of talked to her. I said, well, your tone can be the best thing on the planet, but if nobody can hear you, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day.
Yep.
So that's kind of the unfortunate truth of it, is if nobody can hear your tone, your best tone is the worst tone, because no, it's non-existent.
Yep. I mean, there's songs, there's certain songs where it's just like an electric guitar and a vocal, or the electric guitar is supposed to be occupying all those frequencies, and that's when that kind of thing works great.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that's actually, you know, Leo Fender designed the electric guitar amplifier for that, the pickups. He basically wanted a massive scoop in the mid-range, because he wanted it to be electric guitar and someone's vocals right there where it was scooped out.
That makes a lot of sense.
He thought that was the function of an electric guitar in a mix. That was before the days of massive kick drum and bright cymbals. You know, recording technology probably couldn't even, you know, replicate what a cymbal sounded like until, you know, the late 50s or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Well, let alone those super low kick drums that make the needle jump off. That just...
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why Fender amps sound the way they do. And that was on purpose, because you have this kind of mid-rangey recording, and you basically had to fight that every step of the way to get something other than just mid-range.
Yeah.
And we don't struggle with that today.
No. No, not at all. No, we got more options than we know what to do with, so...
And, I mean, when I, you know, I engineer records, and pretty much everything gets some sort of high-pass filter, because there's just a lot of frequencies, like, way down there that you don't need, and they're actually going to disrupt the entire mix.
Right.
You know, I don't use anything below 50 hertz. Most instruments get, you know, some sort of high-pass filter at, like, at least 200. A lot of them all the way up to, like, 750.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm super, I've been involved in that, but I kind of did it with my ears and not my eyeballs, so I kind of didn't know what frequencies was what, because I basically had our engineer, he was getting worn out, like, that poor guy, he was doing a lot of mixing on his spare time late at night, and he was just like, I need another set of ears on this. And so I wouldn't look. He would just do, does that sound better or does that sound better? And sometimes the frequencies, I had no idea what he was adjusting. Mm-hmm. And then I'd turn around and look, and my mind would be blown.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's you just got to mix with your ears. I mean, that's why people love mixing with consoles, because, you know, it says 20K or whatever, but you don't really know.
No.
A lot of times it's like way out. You just got to use your ears, and if you're adjusting to the numbers that, you know, someone told you, it's wrong.
Yeah. Well, it could, I mean, because if you're adjusting to numbers, that could be to completely different frequencies. I mean, they told you to scoop out whatever, but they recorded way more frequencies than you did. So, who knows? Or vice versa. I don't know. That's way out of my league. My league is, does this fuzz pedal make me happy or not? That's that's my league. How much distortion can I put on one amplifier?
Yeah.
Just because I think it's funny.
I mean, I would say I'm definitely an amp builder and designer by trade, but the recording thing is like a pretty strong hobby.
Yeah.
Of mine, so I like nerding out about that stuff. Pro audio equipment's a major hobby of mine. I mean,
wow, you had a giant tape machine here a couple months ago.
Oh, yeah.
That I seen. I don't remember what it was, though.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You were probably here when I had my Ramsa console, too. Yeah, I had an Atari 4-track half-inch MX-5050. Which sounded awesome. I've had a lot of different tape decks over the years, and it was definitely the the most pro one I've ever had, and I had a nice Ramsa console, which is they're cool. They sound really good. I mean, the pre's kind of sound a little API-ish, and I eventually had to get rid of all that stuff just because I need room in my shop.
You do. You. I mean, it's a decent-sized shop, and it's like, oh, there's an amp, there's an amp, there's an amp. Oh, there's an amp. Oh, I didn't see that over there. That's, yep. I mean, it's crazy, which is a, I mean, it's a good problem to have, but it's just interesting.
So I don't generally do repair at home. Because I try to keep, you know, the repair business separate. I've been working at Old Town Music as a repair tech 2 days a week. And I have I try to just do the new amps here. And I have a couple guys helping me out with that who come and they expect, you know, a clean work environment.
Well, that's too much to ask
that's
for.
Too,
but,
yeah, that's
you,
too bad.
Yeah, you can't have that.
I counted 15 amps in my shop earlier today that people dropped off for repair. Like, here you go.
I'm going to just shut my mouth and pretend that I have never had anything to do with that.
I have a mountain of amps in my shop that they just kind of keep getting dropped off. I think I might have to declare a moratorium on Buddy repairs.
At 15, it's... Yeah, you're getting into some serious time.
I mean, it's kind of a liability, too. I mean, they're all, like, vintage Fenders, and they're pretty nice amps.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, yeah, I just have like 15 amps that don't belong to me in my shop. Yeah, I don't know. I gotta stop doing that.
But not for me, right?
Like yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, that's really everyone.
Like, we're all right, yeah. Come on, man.
Hey, dude, are we still cool?
Yeah, are we still cool? Come on. Come on. Yeah, no. That's something I do all the time, is yeah, no. But yeah, no, I totally get it. Man, that's... Like you say, though, that is a good problem to have.
It's good, man. I mean, like a few years ago when I moved to Portland, I didn't know anyone like that. I would have... That would have made me so happy, but now it just stresses me out.
Yeah.
It just... Oh, gosh. Makes it harder for me to sleep at night. It's a good problem. You're right. I just have to learn how to manage the that different kind of stress.
Yeah, that's a completely different... I keep saying yeah. That's getting really annoying to everyone. But, So, let's rewind a little bit deeper. You're not an overdrive pedal fan most of the time.
Well, I designed my Monarch amp to basically do the same thing that... most people use an overdrive pedal for. Except, you know, obviously it's always on. But I feel like most people use overdrive pedals for the compression. Because, you know, they add a little dirt, but it's the compression that people are, you know, you got notes that ring out all of a sudden, and you have, you know, it's actually touch sensitive. Compression equals touch sensitivity.
Right.
It's just, you know, you can get different tones depending on your pick attack, but one's not a whole lot louder than another. That's kind of, I guess, my schema on the whole thing. But yeah, I designed the Monarch to do that.
By the way, Eric Grilly has a nice touch sensitivity video with the Benson Monarch. that me and my buddies have laughed at so many times. That is brilliant.
I feel like most people, you know, we haven't had a whole lot of feedback on that.
I don't understand that. We have laughed. We have watched that so many times. That's going in the show notes. I think it is absolutely hilarious. And well, both of those videos that you guys did with the
Robbie Augsburger.
Yeah, those are phenomenal. And I cannot believe I can't believe that people don't blow those up, because we've watched the crap out of this.
I don't know. I mean, I guess most people don't like Tim and Eric, and it's kind of that kind of comedy.
And there again, me and my buddies, fans of them, so there's that.
Yeah, I mean, we might be just barking up the wrong tree.
You know, I really wouldn't think so, but...
I wouldn't think so either. Most people who are into tone and, you know, guitars are...
a little bit goofball.
Yeah. They're just, you know, they care about this thing that obviously no one's going to make money off of. Like, they're not in it for the money. They're not in it for, like, the social blah, blah, blah.
No.
They're just, I don't know.
In it for the nerding aspect. But, no, you guys got to watch this. I'm serious.
Yep, just type in Eric Early touch sensitivity. or the Eric Early switches video.
The switches is great.
Hysterical, too.
Eric's pedal corner. That's not a separate video, but that's in the touch sensitivity one, I think.
I really thought that thing would go viral.
I did, too.
Me and Robbie were just doubling over laughing editing that thing. We were like, this is the greatest gear demo video of all time. You know, you could hear, like, the soft rain falling outside.
Yes.
When it was released, it was just like...
Oh, I mean, I feel like I've watched it more times than I should, to be honest. I've watched that video so many times. And maybe it's just because I have the relationship, but I thought that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I'm a Blitzen Trapper fan, also, as is the rest of the guys that I know find that hilarious. So
yeah,
we'll be linking to that, and everyone will say you're an idiot. That's not funny. You guys are just stupid.
Yeah, man. Trust me, you don't want to link to it. That's committing social media suicide.
Because
no one thinks that's funny except apparently us two.
That's impossible. That's impossible. Tim and Eric could not have been on the air for that long, and only us two find that kind of stuff funny. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, we're scratching some sort of itch.
Well, we've been going pretty long. I could go all night. I know you could too, but we might have to do a part two on this.
Yeah, at this I'm point. Into it. Yeah,
we'll talk more craziness, but yeah, we're up in we're literally up in an attic with no AC in 100 degree weather, sweating. Well,
I mean, it's a finished attic.
Well, it's a nice attic. It is. Not going to lie, this is one of the nicest attics I've ever seen. But doesn't change the fact that we are roasting our brains out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably already at work already, so you've probably turned this off now. So, for Chris Benson of Benson Amps, and Blake Weiland of Tone Mob, as always, good luck and good tones.
Thanks for having me, Blake, and thanks for having me, Internet.
Yo, we'll do it again. One last thing before we totally sign off here. I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville, that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously, seriously, seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If
you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gunstery as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gunstreet harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunstreetWiringShop.com and check them out.